Exposed, the podcast in which we review all the best albums of the 80s, 1 month at a time. We will break them down, give you the skinny, and duke it out over whether or not you should dig these out again. So, if you're ready for an 80s music deep dive from Aha to Wham, Bowie to XTC, Madonna, hair metal, new wave, and all points in between, then crank the boombox, turn your Walkman up to 10, and let's go.
Welcome to 80s Music Exposed, the addictive 80s podcast review show. I'm joined by my co-hosts. Say hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
So folks who are tuning in probably know what we do.
I mean, I'm assuming there's newbies every show. We're picking people up a few at a time.
The title of the podcast is 80s Music Exposed, 80s Albums Reviewed. We review five albums from every month of the 80s.
Every swinging month.
And we also do classic album episodes. Sometimes we do a year-end wrap-up. This is probably episode bazillion. No, 60-something.
Yeah.
Of our show, and the project goes on.
Keeps on ticking.
So, listener feedback.
Well, before we get to that, we should. I got a few housekeeping notes.
Oh, yeah. I'm not even following our shit.
I'm looking at the notes.
I was looking at my own
all
notes.
All over the place.
I have my own Bible over
here
that I wrote.
Let's stay on the notes. Before we do, Henry sings the Billboard Top 100 hits, our top five hits from the month that was. I should say what the month was. Well, this episode is December of 1983, which means we have almost made it through another year of the 80s.
3 years of music.
Four, dude. We covered 1980.
There's a zero year.
Yes.
There's a zero year. Take that, chronologists.
That's right. We should mention we are going to do a year-end episode next episode after this one. I don't know when we're recording, but it's going to be so exciting because Junatime is going to join us, who we talked about and played a little bit of her song couple weeks ago, maybe?
Yes,
a couple podcasts ago?
Not the last step, was it? Or the one before that?
I think it was the one before that. But she is gracious.
Yeah. Check the show notes.
And she's graciously agreed to come on the year-end show and help us pick the best song or best albums of 1983. And this will be our first official, like, guest, right?
Guest person, yes.
Yeah, so we're excited about that. So make sure you tune in for that.
For sure.
Everybody dresses up. We all dress up. Like, Henry and I wear tuxedos.
Mm-hmm.
Megan wore a tuxedo last year, but we don't know what she's going to wear this year. And it'll be fun. Everybody get a cocktail, maybe a martini, and it'll be...
Of course.
I think I will drink this year on the show.
Excellent.
Tequila.
But Henry, everyone...
That's a good goal.
Everything I hear back, feedback-wise, about the podcast... People want to get quickly to you singing the top five songs from the month that
That's
was.
Not true. That's a lie that you just told. Mm-hmm.
Well, my sister listens and she likes that
part. Oh, does she?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Okay, so the number one song from December of 1983 was Say, Say, Say by McCartney and Jackson.
Say, say, say. I'm so off.
Yeah.
Say. What is the note? Say, say, say what you need, but don't something, something. Mind my direction.
Good.
Hey,
it's better than last episode. Not good, though.
Okay.
Number two is Say It Isn't So by Hall & Oates.
Say it isn't so. It isn't so. Oh, say it isn't so.
I got a question. I thought about that when I put this song in there. Does anybody sing that song and not do the backup?
No, I don't think you could.
Like, everybody does both lines.
You can't do... Like the whole song
without doing the yeah, you got to do
and
that
then because there's it's part of the hook.
It is. It's part of
the
hook.
Song.
I was thinking he's not gonna.
It's not as recognizable without it.
You have to really commit and like go for it and be and feel. Oh God, it's not gonna be good.
All right, number three was "Owner of a Lonely Heart" by a band we covered last episode.
This is hard to do this one justice.
Owner of
you can do better than lonely that.
You gotta put it in this part of your throat. Owner of owner of a lonely. You can't get there.
Nobody can do it.
I appreciate you
it's
trying.
It's not Barry Gibb. It's not like
It's its own thing. As see last episode. Also from the last episode, Union of the Snake by Duran Duran.
The Union of the Snake is on the climb. How's that?
It's good. I don't know if the word climb was in there, but that's good.
Isn't that what it is?
You can improvise.
Isn't that the lyric?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
And we don't want to be wrong about Duran Duran. That's coming up in a second, folks. Stay tuned.
I know.
And number five was Love is a Battlefield by Pat Benatar.
The only part of that song that I know, I'm trying to think of the chorus. I didn't look at this before.
Yeah, go. Give it a try.
All you know is, love is a battlefield. That's all I know. How does the chorus go?
Love we are young.
Heartache, we stand.
There we go.
No promises, no demands.
Oh, wow.
Something like that.
It took us a while to get there. I'm going to cut. The best part about editing is I'm going to cut out me and you for 5 minutes.
You'll cut out all the funny parts.
I don't know. That was pretty decent.
Cuts out all the funny parts to make people happy.
That's because people like it when we're not funny, Henry. They like it when we argue.
Let's be serious.
And be serious.
Be serious. Really? Now fight.
Speaking of serious,
I like being lighthearted and like having fun, but people get really serious about some artists.
They do.
As we know.
No shit.
And that's true. And I'm glad you brought that up, Megan, because I just got fucking skewered after this last episode. And within like what, 2 hours of the episode releasing?
Dropped, and the dude started laughing his ass off.
Yeah. And so.
And cut and paste and shit.
Yeah, like really serious fucking
right off the thing
vitriol. So I am here to eat crow. I made the huge mistake of saying the Reflex was not a top 10 American hit, and that the Union of the Snake was the only hit off of Seven and the Ragged Tiger. How wrong was I?
How wrong were you?
Fucking
the
really
Reflex
wrong.
Was number one.
It was a number one. It wasn't just a top 10. It was a number one.
You misremembered it.
I take full credit for the error.
Flex.
People make mistakes. Like, don't remember things sometimes. Like, you know, we all have, other lives and like jobs and stuff. So, you know, maybe people can kind of keep that in mind too. It's like, it's easy to maybe not remember a detail like that, especially if you're not like a super fan of Duran Duran.
Exactly. And I appreciate that defense. But I will also say, I appreciate these fucking people because this is a community, right? Yeah. I like that there's a super fan out there within 2 hours correcting us. So keep up the good work. Maybe dial down just a little bit the vitriol. I mean,
it felt bad, Henry.
I felt bad because you were wrong.
That's why I felt bad. When you're
sometimes some of them have been kind of rude.
Some of them have been a little rude. Welcome to Twitter. I don't know if you realize this. Not nice always. Well,
but
on the plus side, what some of our Twitter people said, they said, get Megan another mic.
And we did.
But, you know what the other piece of feedback we got was, why don't you guys do something every other week?
So here's what I would say to all of you.
She's what I would tired say or cold. Her fingers
we,
are like
the
frozen.
Three of us, I think I can speak for the three of us when I would say, we would love to do that.
Yeah,
that is our goal, actually, twice a month.
Yes, it is.
And I like podcasts to do that. If you guys out there in 80s music exposed land would get the Patreon up to 350 Patreon subscribers.
If I get 350 Patreon subscribers,
we will guarantee that we'll put out two episodes a month, even if it means all three of us aren't on every episode.
Every Thursday.
We'll make sure that we get every other week a podcast out to you. We need 350 Patreon subscribers. So you guys out there, and you don't have to be a big one. You don't have to be a...
No.
You don't have to be like a Matt Getsky.
A dollar.
Yeah, you could be a dollar, right? You could be...
Getsky.
You could be a $5. We have a new level called the Getsky, which is a $25 Patreon subscriber. You could do that if you wanted to, if you really wanted to jack things up, you know?
Let's keep it in there, dude. You got to. I love it.
So anyway, yeah, that's our pledge to you, and it's up to you, the ball's in y'all's court, and we would love to do it. I'm not being facetious. That would be enough.
I agree.
Yeah, that we could feasibly do it.
That being said, our Patreon subscribers are the bomb.
Yeah,
they financed a new Blue Ball microphone and yes. headset for Megan, so yes. she sounds clear, as well as they're paying the freight for our bandwidth.
Yep.
For our podcast, we want to thank everybody who does that. Special stuff for all of you guys, so thanks a lot.
Yeah really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
And so we'll get to the fun stuff real quick, but we've decided to put all the boring stuff that's at the end of episodes right at the beginning. And Henry,
yes,
speed race this shit.
So basically, we want you to be able to contact us if you like the records we're choosing. We would like for you to consider subscribing to the pod on your podcast thing of choice. You'll have our newest content downloaded to your device. Like, rate, and review us, and follow us on Apple Podcasts or other platforms like Stitcher, Pandora, Spotify, that you're using. You can chat us up, ask us questions, even on Twitter at 80s exposed, or email us at 80smusicexposed@gmail.com. You can go to the internet, 80smusicexposed.com, and stream our content and look at our blog posts there. You can leave us a message on SpeakPipe using your actual voice. Chris's Twitter handle is at TCI Duke. My Twitter handle is at Hank G. Megan uses Instagram and is at Bastards of Young 92. Thank you, everyone, for listening to our show. Let's talk about records.
Yeah. All right. The first one we're going to cover is by Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan. Nice. A living legend. It's called Infidels. It is an all music 4-star album. It's a Rolling Stone 4-star album. I say it doesn't have a hit. It doesn't have an American top 20 hit on it. I knew a lot of the songs, so I don't want to get Dylan fans on me, because I know they're
Bob Dylan isn't rabid. Like a hit maker, though. That's not really like Good. His mission. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right. Well, this song I'm going to play is called Joker Man.
Standing on the water, casting your bread, while the eyes of the idol with the iron head are glowing. Distant ships sailing.
Start, because I'm like the non Bob Dylan guy in the room.
I think. Yeah, start it.
So I'll say some of the things I know about it, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
This album came right after a 3-album set of like gospel tinged albums. They call it like
Christian/gospel.
Christian gospel album.
Yeah.
The one right before the Christian gospel set was kind of like this album about I'm trying to look for new ways to find things to do, and I don't. And I, it was kind of like a lead in to the gospel album. This is kind of a lead out, like, don't trust all this stuff. Don't trust government, don't trust faith, don't trust anything. Like, I'm coming out of the thing, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of classic Bob Dylan, so I'm a heretic. I love this record. I thought it sounded great. I thought it was fresh. Mark Knopfler had a big hand on it. You could hear his guitar playing right there, which I thought really went well with these songs. Sly and Robbie, the famous reggae producers, produced it, and you could hear a little reggae tinge in that track. I felt like the last two tracks on the album are him kind of veering into new wavy kind of territory a little bit, which I kind of dug. I guess I liked it a lot because it is kind of Dylan. It's Dylan. I mean, it's still Dylan, but it doesn't feel super heavy. Like he's trying to like preach me down where I can't even. And I still don't know what any of the songs are about, by the way. I can't ever.
You really have to dig.
Right.
And that's I think that's one of my major rubs about Dylan. It's like,
he's kind of an enigma. That's like sort of his thing, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But he's such a great song lyric writer, singer, song guy that, like, I found this, I didn't find anything on this record really, really surprising musically. You know, but I rarely do it with a Dylan record, except for, like, this isn't Blood on the Tracks.
Well, you know, I mean, this one, I did, because I found it, because with Mark Knopfler's, like, finger picking behind him, and then the solos are all Mick Rhodes, who was in the Rolling Stones and left the Rolling Stones, and he's got these, and Dylan doesn't solo, and then you got Sly and Robbie adding a little reggae tinge to it, so I thought it sounded a lot different then.
I thought these guys were really reaching to try to make this thing pop, and I think he was bored. He sounded bored. And the reason why I say
he
this...
He always sounds bored, though.
Yeah, I totally disagree.
But, like...
Yeah, well, like, laid back.
But, like, early Dylan, he's not. The guy sounded really engaged back then. In fact, if you go back and listen to Christian Record 1, which is... It also has Mark Knopfler on it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it has the other guys. If you listen to him singing on that, I'm like, the guy, he had soul in there. Like something had gotten into Dylan's body and made him sound like he felt it and meant it or something. This sounded like he was just like, okay, I'm coming down off this high.
You're talking about the album Saved, right?
It's called, it's about the tracks. It's
Slow Train Coming.
Slow Train Coming is the one that I'm thinking about that I liked. There's two others after that.
Yeah. So, but, Slow Train Coming, then Saved, and then Shot of Love.
Yeah. I think that if you do look at the, and I'm not going counter to all the countless Dylan scholars out there at all. They could all wrestle me to the ground on this, but it's like, I feel like the songs were kind of melodically samey, but the more I kept digging into the lyrics, that's where I found the beauty of it all.
Yeah. So
that makes sense.
Yeah. And I'm going to take an exact opposite tack from Henry, because I love Time Out of Mind because it is super musically good. And I think Dylan is better Infidels and Later than he is early, which is heresy, I know. But
it is a little bit.
But this is the first record where I'm like, wow, he's not just going to stand there with an acoustic guitar and preach at me. He's bringing in a cool band. He's doing the 80s, like we've talked about since the beginning of the show, all of these 60s guys coming and doing the 80s, and some have failed, some have succeeded. I think he hit just the right tone here. It's still Dylan, but it's like, it sounds fresh to me. It, like, compared to, I was expecting Blood on the Tracks Part Two.
Were you?
Because he's out of the gospel phase. Now he's going back to, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Little amen, sticking on the wire, hanging on the thing. And
you're,
it was like,
your
that's
Dylan's
not happening.
Lot better than mine. I was going to cop it in there, like, from the jump. I was going to go,
The songs, I don't think that people give him enough credit, though. Because, like, when people.
I don't either.
They don't ever mention like albums like this. Like when people talk about Dylan, and I was actually like pleasantly surprised. This was not the first time I had listened to this album.
Me either.
But the first time that I had listened to it, I remember being shocked because I assumed that it was bad because nobody ever talked about it.
Mm-hmm. I think the other stuff excited me, and I think, and I'll talk more about. There's another record later that we'll talk about this kind of stuff. But to me, the early Dylan, where he was younger and full of piss and vinegar, was more interesting in some respects.
I know where you're headed with this because I can see the next record on coming up, and you like that kind of shit. But I'm going to say, I'm going to take for our listeners, if you haven't heard Infidels and you know Bob Dylan, you know the big highlights. I say thumbs up, give this a listen. You're going to be pleasantly surprised, like me and Megan. Megan was pleasantly surprised.
Were you?
I'd heard it before too, but I just forgot that I liked it. And it's fun when I find, for me, it's fun when I find Dylan records I like.
I think if you listen to it, you should if you listen to Joker Man, like the song we just played, put the video on. The video is really good.
The video is really
and,
good.
It's got the lyrics on there, which is really helpful in terms of engaging with the music, I think. I don't know why that is for somebody like me.
I also like in the video that there's and when he sings the choruses, they do tight close-ups on his face.
Yeah.
And he's got this one little wispy whisker on his chin, like that he... It's just like he forgot to shave, and no one was like going to tell Dylan, "We're doing a video today. Could we need to cut that?" He's just like, "No."
I read a whole bunch of stuff about that
in and
video.
Did this shit, you know,
about them, about the record company. They made him put on that shirt and that jacket, to go in the middle of the close ups of the gods,
right.
and all of that kind of stuff. There's big controversy about what that song means. Like, who is the Joker Man? And some believe that it's himself.
Yeah. Again, I haven't gotten deep into the lyric part, but I would like to though. I think Megan, you said this a minute ago. That's part of his thing. That's like, I like that the songs were fun and a little less heavy. But there is like, if you want to be a completist, you can get in there.
I love the
I
heavy
like
shit.
That kind of shit. Yeah,
I like the heavy shit. Yeah. But as a like for me as a full record, it's like for whatever reason, I'm just not. Yeah, I'm not feeling it.
What I like is like this to me reminded me of this is the lead in to where Dylan starts playing with Tom Petty, starts going in with the Grateful Dead. Yeah, yeah. The only way I can even like. Get my mind wrapped around not hating the Grateful Dead is when Dylan and Petty enter the scene in the mid 80s. Right.
Yeah.
So like this was like a bridge for me to like, oh yeah, I forgot this Dylan. I kind of like, you know, I'm going to say thumbs up to this one. I like this one.
I'm going to give it a thumbs up as well.
I'm a down guy myself. It's a little better Dylan to listen to. Unfortunately. For
me. Well, speaking of bad Dylan, Henry, why don't you take us to the next
what an asshole.
Record.
This guy, and he never misses an opportunity to slag on. This is like a perennial conversation we've had for, I don't know, 30 years. The next record we're going to consider is from Billy Bragg. I noticed he did not put it as a shit we like. It's shit I like.
I love Billy Bragg. I'm seeing him this month.
Are you, Megan? I'm gonna hand the mic to you because my arguments are getting tired. The record we're gonna consider is "Life's a Riot" with Spy versus Spy, and of course, the song is probably the most popular song on the record is "A New England."
I was 21 years when I wrote this song. I'm 22 now, but I won't be for long. People ask me when I grow up to be a man, but all the girls I love, the two are already pushing prams. I loved you then as I love you still. They put you on a pedestal, they put you on the pill. Don't feel bad about letting me go. Just feel sad about letting me know. I don't want to change the world. I'm not looking for a new England. For another girl, I don't want to change the world. I'm not looking for New England, I'm just looking for another girl. I love the words you wrote to me, but that was bloody yesterday.
I'd rather listen to Kirsten McCall do it any day of the week.
I mean, one thing that for me. Like when I think our friend Tim introduced me to Billy Bragg, and that wasn't this one. It was one of the other, I think it was the one in Yellow. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
I mean, I remember it giving me a headache, but I don't remember the name of it.
About poetry, that was or something
it. Yeah,
like that.
Probably that. One.
But it arrived to me like a really critical part of my life. I was in my 20s, full of piss and vinegar, and all of that, and it gave voice to that in my body in a way that I had not really experienced music before, you know?
Well, what is it about this particular Billy Bragg record that does your boat?
It's the mixture of the personal and the political in this, like, and through the lens of a guy who is 20, 21. And it spoke to me, like that was my wheelhouse I didn't hear it in 83. I heard it much later, you know, when I was in my 20s. So
I don't know. I just find his songwriting very down to earth, I guess. I don't know. Like, I just feel like it's very relatable, even though I don't know how old I was when I discovered Billy Bragg, but I wasn't like a 21-year-old, you know, dude from England or whatever, but I just found it very like just kind of everyday stuff, but also like he does do kind of, you know, the political things. I don't find him particularly preachy. I know some people do, but like, do you find him preachy, Chris?
Yeah, I find him self-righteous, preachy, and a prick. And I want to correct one thing. I don't know when he wrote the song. He might have wrote it when he was 21, but when it came out in 83, he was 30 years old. So you weren't listening to a 21-year-old dude that you could relate to.
Well, maybe I related to
him. I mean, I don't really care about that much.
No, I don't either.
Factually, that doesn't matter to me at all.
Yeah, that part is... I just wanted to correct the record. Yeah, yeah. That part doesn't matter. I'm not slagging on him for being 30 and putting out a record.
Yeah.
I guess when you watch a movie about Wilco and when he and Wilco worked together, tried to work together to do the Hank Williams songs... And the Egos.
Woody Guthrie.
Yeah, the Woody Guthrie. Sorry, Woody Guthrie. And the ego fight between he and Jeff Tweedy got to such a level.
Yeah.
And if you can match egos with Jeff Tweedy at that time in Jeff Tweedy's life, you are a straight prick. Because Jeff Tweedy was a straight prick. I mean...
Well, they both were.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. The guy was, like, so full of his own shit that I just saw right through it. To me, I just saw right through it. Now, Henry, we were hanging out a lot, and I saw it. Henry bought it.
Oh yeah, I was
even like, the guy didn't even have a band because he just doesn't. He's like, fuck it, I'm just so much cooler than a band. Everything about him rubs me the wrong way. Even his fucking ultra Cockney accent, which I know is probably real.
Well, that's real.
It's like,
yeah, but how I feel about Billy Idol.
Like, fuck that guy.
I don't like, and the other part I don't like about it, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong here, every Billy Bragg record I've heard sounds the same. There's no growth. There's no difference. There's just a guy railing on.
I mean, you shit can, you all can day. Take.
Sometimes that's okay, though. Like, sometimes I don't need an artist to, like, try a bunch of different stuff. Like, I mean, sometimes
I can be critical of his other work for sure, but
it does not every album is great.
Whatever other personal failings he may have, or what I think about him personally, you can't erase the talent and meaningfulness of this record. I mean, I don't know how you can smash it over like that.
It's interesting because
being mad at him about Wilco.
Well, it's interesting if you're putting it, and I'm not I stopped being a Wilco fan really, except for Yankee Hotel Foxtrot around that time because he came. Because
of that
came
thing.
Off. Well, we had a little incident at a concert.
Yeah, I remember that. That record probably formed like early bits of my own like politics. You know how I feel about the world and look at it through that lens. I didn't pick up on any of the other stuff. It's true. Does he have an attitude? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I also found him. I also find him to be extremely boring.
Really?
Musically? Yeah.
Interesting. Infidel's great.
Infidel's is great.
Okay.
I think Infidel's
is
a much better album.
I don't get it. Infidel's great. This one,
not even This one sucks.
Wow.
Yeah. It does, and I was hoping for different. I haven't listened to Billy Bragg since we would throw furniture at each other about it 20 years ago. But
I know, I'm so over that.
I was like, oh, I'm gonna have to mea culpa and go, that's pretty good. And then I listened to it, I was like, no, it's still
it's
terrible.
Great. The world knows it's great. Moving right along. So what do you think, Megan? You're thumbs up on it. I'm thumbs up. Chris's thumbs.
Yes, I'm definitely a thumbs up.
He's excellent. A thumbs down.
Megan, we have made it to your part of the show, girl.
Yes, and I have my choice.
Bring it. This is the Ladies' Choice Play.
Oh, yes. So it's by The Replacements, one of my favorite bands. So the album Hootenanny, which is all music 4.5, and also shit we like. But so it was hard for me to pick because there's definitely like a few songs on this album that I really like. But I think I'm going to have to go with Color Me Impressed. We'll be right back.
Talk about it, Megan. Go.
Megan.
I mean, I feel like this is kind of maybe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the lesser known or lesser talked about Replacements records.
Is it?
What do you think?
I guess I don't know. I talk about them all the time and I always bring it up, but
I think it is, Megan. I think you're right. I think it's probably the least talked about.
Yeah, it's kind of one. I think it gets forgotten a little bit, which I'm not really sure why. I mean, it's not my favorite, but there's a few songs on it that I think really stand out, like that one in particular, because I think it's still kind of like their punkier sound still. Mm-hmm. Like this album has like a little bit of that left, and I mean they still have some and like their later stuff, but I feel like it just gets kind of less punk with each album, which was fine with them. But like then Within Your Reach, that's a great song, and that's like super romantic. Like that was on the Say Anything soundtrack. Remember that movie?
Yeah, I do. That's a great get. I forgot about that.
And I love Buck Hill. That's just like a instrumental kind of weird song, but I like it. I think it's kind of a weird record.
What balls to like start the record, name the record after a song where you all switched your instruments and nobody played the one that they came with. Mm-hmm. And then it was like a fight. Like he was having a fight with Jesperson or whoever. I think Jesperson produced this, right?
This is an early one. And so
he was like, well, fuck this. And then everybody switches it over and he's like, all right, that's song one, track one, song one, and call it that. And so like this band started I love bands that seem like they're about to fall apart. Like, and that it might, this is a whole record of a band that like, they might not make it to the end of the record.
You know, I kind of like though that it's a little like wild and fun, and it genuinely feels that way. Like it doesn't feel like that's like carefully curated, and that's something that I really like about them as a band. And I mean, sometimes it didn't work out. Like I know, obviously, they were known for having pretty terrible shows sometimes, mm-hmm. but like I kind of like that, you know, they had a lot of personality, and I feel like this album has a lot of personality, and like, I can't really think of another band that has an album like this.
I can't either. Can you?
I was going to say, it doesn't really, like, this is kind of a very unique album.
Not completely sound like this, but the same kind of attitude. I would say the first Pavement record.
Oh, really? I guess
Slashed or whatever.
Which, that makes sense, though.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Kind of still, like, the attitude that we're putting out and what we are feeling right now is more important than if we've got all the shit together. I mean, the drummer on the first Pavement record couldn't even play the drums. They didn't care. It wasn't part of it. But I'm gonna just take the opposite tack from you guys, just because
contrarian.
But I'm not gonna say this is horrible. I'm gonna just say, for me, the Replacements never really started until Let It Be, which is the next record.
Well, that's my favorite record.
And here's why I think the story Henry told at the beginning. That was more important to Westerberg than making a good album, because they were so angry and they were so, I think, scared that they weren't good enough yet. They tanked their own shit on those first two records. That's my opinion. That's what the like punky, like crazy sound is. Now, people like that. I'm not saying they don't like that. But when you,
I like some of it.
When you name a record Hootenanny because the producer said, you guys switching instruments, that sounded like shit. It sounded like a fucking country Hootenanny. And you named the album Hootenanny just to spite that guy. Mm-hmm. You're not really worried about what the general public is going to think about the album. And it's obvious these guys made much better records in the future.
Yeah.
And again, I'm the lone voice in the woods here, because I like All Shook Down better than any Replacements record on earth.
I think it's so weird.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's amazing. And when I hear that record up against Hootenanny, I'm like, that's just like an outtakes B-side, them fucking around doing coke and drinking. Uh-huh. But it's not an album that I would recommend to anybody, unless you're a completist, or I don't like when people tank or spike songs on purpose, which, again, Slanted and Enchanted by Pavement, one of my favorite bands. I like Terror Twilight and Brighten the Corners the best of people.
Yeah, yeah.
And Pavement people hate those records because they're too produced.
I saw it differently. I saw it as like a bunch of troubled alcoholics. I didn't necessarily see it the way you did, though, because I don't see them deliberately aiming for the ditch. I see them as
like,
guys.
But
except for the part where you said
that song is gorgeous.
Except for the part where you said that they didn't think they were good enough.
Yeah, but I want to delve into that a little bit, because I think that's the story of Paul Westerberg's whole career, is that I'm afraid I'm not going to be known as great, even if I am, so I'm going to tank it before you can tell me I'm not great.
It's a very Midwestern thing. Help me out, Megan. Yeah. I don't know if this is true, but it's a very Midwestern aesthetic to be really careerist. Am I right?
Well, yeah, and I feel like everybody kind of shits on the Midwest pretty often, so it's like kind of people from the Midwest, I feel like, are a little bit different in that way. Yeah. Like, that's something that's always appealed to me about the Replacements. I feel like they're very unpretentious, but almost to the point where, like, the self-sabotage a little bit, because I do think that Paul Westerberg and the Replacements, like all the other dudes, like I feel like they were super, super talented, but they definitely had like addiction problems. I mean, you're not wrong when you say alcoholic. I mean, that's definitely, I think, a pretty big problem, especially for Bob Stinson at this point, because like it was Let It Be, and then I think that was the last record he was on, right?
And we're going to review Let It Be, so I won't talk about it too much in the coming,
by the way, I don't want to be branded as I hate the Replacements, because I love Let It Be. I think Let It Be is one of the best
albums. I don't think anybody would even think that.
I just, every time
we've talked about them before.
Yeah,
but I will say this too, like, I love the Soft Bulletin, but I think the first three Flaming Lips records, they're trying to figure shit out, and I don't like it, and a lot of people that better. So I am one of those people. I feel like I'm more of the, like, with the Church, I like the Church once they got to LA and got a producer.
Me too.
I don't like when they were working.
We told a whole story.
I know. So I might be the guy that just likes polish and stuff.
But it's fucked up, because I like it for, I like different records for different reasons. Like, I do like All Shook Down because it was like the produced record. It was a, you know, Matt Wallace practiced garage, the, you know, they brought in all these garagey elements, but in a professional way. But I also like the Sellout record. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the Sellout record. Mm-hmm. Like, something about, oh my God, what's the one? What's the Sellout record? Megan, help me. Black.
For the Replacements?
Please to meet
don't
me.
Tell a
don't
soul.
Tell a soul.
Don't Tell a Soul.
Yeah, Don't Tell a Soul.
That's the one that they...
Even though I don't really consider that like a Sellout
record. I don't either.
Record,
I,
because
I like it.
Because actually, stylistically, it's very like...
They got fucked on that.
What record. I would consider, I like that record.
I do too.
The
but
production
it's,
of it, obviously, you like, the time wasn't great. But
when they redid it, all right, we're not going to talk about. It.
Yeah,
we can't. We, this is in the '90s. We can talk about that.
No, it's 1989, so we're going to cover it.
We are.
But poor old All Shook Down came out in 1990, so we don't
can't
get to cover.
Talk. We don't
it.
Get yeah. to. Mm-hmm. We don't get to close. Cover it. You'll have to close that out when it's 90s music exposed, Megan, and you're the host.
Oh Jesus Christ!
Oh Jesus Christ! I'm a big thumbs up. It started my, like I said, my lifelong love affair with Broken Things. So,
okay, and for me, it's a thumbs. It's just barely a thumbs down, just because I feel like Paul Westerberg tanked it himself. Sure. Not that the songs are terrible, just man, I actually think some of the songs on this album could be Let It Be if he would have just.
How old was he though when this record came out?
Great
Let's
question.
See. That's what I want to know.
Came out in April of 83, so he was...
Because he was born in 1959.
69, 79, 89, so 79 is
20,
is
24. 24. That's pretty young.
That's pretty young. That's pretty young. Yeah, and still working shit out. I get it. I even get the self-doubt and, like, I would rather tank this before someone else calls it shitty kind of attitude. I just think he is great, and he's got great in him. It's coming. Just... Stop with the hootenanny. Stop with the hootenanny. It's a good joke, but stop with the hootenanny.
All that's like the reason that people liked them was for that stuff. Was because of the danger.
There is a whole there's a whole fan of them that like that shit better than Same with Pavement. I run into Pavement people all the time. They're like, "You like Pavement? Yeah, I like Pavement. My favorite album's Bright in the Corners. Fuck you.
Fuck you."
Yes.
So I get it. I get it. Okay, so. Again, I'm the odd man out. I'm a thumbs down, but just barely. The next record, I'm two thumbs up on. I love this record. I love this band. This may be their hidden gem record that I always forget about until I pull go through their records, and then I'm like, oh, I forgot about this one. It's the Cocteau Twins. The album is called Head Over Heels. It's an All Music 4.5 star record. It is on the Shit We Like list as well, even though I feel bad about that now because I didn't put Henry's record on there. But
well, he doesn't like it, so it's not a we. It's a me. It's a me. Go ahead.
All right. It so made it. This song is called Sugar Hiccup. Proper since Garland's. There were a couple EPs in between, but again, I see a theme for me developing here. Garland's is my least favorite Cocteau Twins album because it's so raw and scratchy and angry sounding that I don't like to listen to it. But this is the first one with still just the two of them, Liz Fraser and Robin Guthrie, and a drum machine. So they are just using a reel-to-reel drum machine.
Yeah,
with tape, which is kind of cool. But all of these songs, I think, I always forget how much pop, is that the right word, poppy, these songs are? And I
like
forget.
Dream pop, dream I would kind of consider it, you know
you
what
forget
I mean?
Because you know what they grew up to be.
Yeah, and also, yeah, I'd forgotten too, because I hadn't listened to this one in a while, she's still kind of understandable at this point. She's not just making up syllables. There's a lot of lines that you can understand. Now, when you get back to the later stuff, like Four Calendar Cafe, you're going to start understanding lyrics again. Mm-hmm. But like Bluebell Knoll, which is one of my favorite Cocteau Twins album, I defy you to tell me what the fuck.
Well, she was finding the voice, I think.
Sure.
It's weird because I agree with you 100% about it being better than Garland's. They were closer to their contemporaries.
Yes.
Which were like The Birthday Party
right.
and people like that. And they were in a record like this. They're finding their own voice. The Replacements, you know, The Replacements stink. They grew up in the I guess you'd call it, not hardcore, Megan, but
consider them like punk.
Yeah.
So the early stuff.
So mm-hmm. and they're transitioning. In similar fashion with the Cocteaus, the tools that are in Guthrie's and Fraser's toolbox are starting to gel into a new thing, right? You hear them trying different beat combinations. Like the beats are more icy and hard than Garland's did. And so
I feel like they're developing their signature sound.
Yeah, they're basically farther away. They're farther away from their influences and developing their own bit.
One of the criticisms at the time of this record was that the Cocteau Twins had slowed down, that the tempos had slowed down. Mm-hmm. And Robin Guthrie said that was because we were doing so much speed that they all sounded super fast to us, which I thought was the perfect answer. And I also liked how surly he always was. There's some great interviews when he was on 120 Minutes where he basically mumbles and won't speak, and the poor interviewer guy's almost shitting himself because he just doesn't know what to do.
There was a period of time where Chris and I were just very obsessed. And if you listen to like the music we were trying to make at the time, we were very obsessed with the Cocteaus. And I remember going back to read Guitar Player magazine and trying to figure out Robin Guthrie's pedal recipe, and he was always dodgy about what it was.
Well, and he was also always like, I don't know why you're interviewing me because I'm not a guitar player.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know how to play guitar.
Right.
And you know, he really did know how to play. He's just fucking around.
I also want to say real quick, just as a maybe a memory for some of the folks that are listening, the reason this record first hit me so hard was my older brother went to the record store to get it. And back in this, in 1983, it was not in America. It was an import record from England. So he had to pay the money, give it to the record store guy, and then wait about 3 weeks, 4 weeks for the record to come in. And he'd have to go check and see if it came in and go check and see if it came in. So when we got the record, it was almost like we had gotten some, like Raider, like the Lost Ark or something. Like it meant more when you went and ordered it on an import and had to weeks to get it. And I think that added a mystique to the Cocteau Twins to me, because also my brother didn't, he had just heard a guy tell him about it. He didn't know what it sounded like. So when we put it on, and remember we were listening to, like, at that point, you know, the Hooters. So we were just like, holy shit, I don't even know what this
stood
was.
Out.
Yeah, so it they took on this mystical thing to me, and I think part of that was that import experience. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of our listeners probably remember that, especially that were record heads. I feel, I don't want to be the grumpy old man, but I feel a lot of kids miss out on that with music today, where it's just like, you can have any song you want, anytime, instantly, and they don't treasure it the way we do, mm-hmm. like that kind of thing. So... that was a big part of it for me.
I didn't know about them when I was, like, growing up. I think I discovered them maybe when I was, like, in my early 20s. Because, mm-hmm. like, I really got into, like, dream pop and shoegaze. Mm-hmm. And they're obviously in that wheelhouse. And I had never heard anything like them before.
Do you, was Heaven or Las Vegas the first one you heard? Or do you think it
I think so, probably.
I mean, I would think.
I think so. It's, like, the hit.
But, you know, one important thing about this record is if you look at the cover, right? So it's got the one previous to this, Garlands, was not done by the is it Envelope 23 or is it 23 Envelope?
I think it was Envelope 23.
I may have that messed up in my head. Mm-hmm. But it's Von Oliver and all those guys kind of created the whole, you know, British independent outside of factory records.
Yeah, especially 4AD. Mm-hmm. They did basically not just Cocteau Twins, but they did most of the 4AD album covers in house.
Yeah, so it was like the design aesthetic was like 4AD or factory, you know.
Yes.
And one or the other you kind of were, I guess. One of my favorite coffee table books was a whole book of Von Oliver 4AD prints and stuff that I wanted to cut out and put in frames and put them all over my house. It looked cool.
Yeah, and I would say, for me, this is a great record, but I would also say if you just know Heaven or Las Vegas or you just know later Cocteau Twins, this is a very palatable early Cocteau Twins record. Like sure. It's still full of pop songs.
Yeah.
It is, but it's also like they are trying out different stuff.
Definitely.
They ain't quite made it to the mature...
No, but it's
Cocteau Twins sound yet.
Megan, is it a thumbs up or a thumbs down for you?
I would definitely give it a thumbs up.
Cool. If you want to check out, also Liz Fraser is just put out a new EP with her husband called The Sun Signature is the name of the band, and it's the two of them. It's her husband and her. Her husband used to be in another '80s band that I can't remember the name of at the time. But he's super. He's some super cool guy too. English guy.
He is.
Yeah,
cool.
They're pretty active still. Yeah. I think like Liz Fraser, she does a lot.
Yeah, they just put that EP out, and I guess a couple years ago they did some concerts. And she's known, I think, as much now as anything else for Mezzanine, doing the song.
Oh yeah,
I'm drawing a blank on the name of the band.
Massive Attack.
Thank you, Massive Attack song. Finally.
I was searching this. That was bad.
So, the thumbs up for me on that one. Okay, Henry, since I stole that one, you go ahead and introduce
the last
one.
I'm glad you took it, Russ. next record we're going to consider is a guy named Elton John.
Ooh.
Elton John had a comeback.
And
the record was called Too Low for Zero, his bazillionth record.
It's actually his 17th record.
Right.
That's
the song.
Insane.
And are we going to listen to both of these? Are you going to pop both of these in here?
No, I was just going to. So it's an All Music 4.5-star. It's a Rolling Stone 4-star. Mm-hmm. It had two hits. I think that's what you're referring to.
Yes, but which one do we want to play?
Well, one of them is called I'm Still Standing, and the other is called I Guess That's Why They Call It the Blues. I was going to play I Guess That's Why They Call It the Blues.
Don't wish it away. Don't look at it like it's forever. Between you and me, I could honestly say that things can only get better. Before you and me run to the place in our hearts where we hide. And I guess that's why they call it the blues. Time on my hands could be time spent with you. Laughing like children, living like love.
I mean, I think that song is like, it's a pretty good song.
So, I'll start on this one. So, again, with my research, I was shocked to find that a lot of people find this to be his best album of the 80s. It was critically known as like his comeback. And I guess Henry kind of schooled me on this before I did the research that Bernie Taupin is basically wrote all of these melodies and lyrics.
First time back.
So I can't blame it on Bernie Taupin
after being gone for 7 years.
But I think for me, the problem with this is that it does sound like two hits and filler. And then there's a production problem with it for me.
Tell me about that.
It sounds like they're trying to do 80s production, but Bernie Taupin and Elton John are still trying to do a 70s Elton John record, which, in my opinion, would have been a better way to go with it, production-wise. I don't know if it would have been a hit in the 80s. And this album was a hit, by the way. So remember, we're slagging on a hit. So it did what they meant for it to do. But I think you and I, Henry, have talked about this a lot with some bands that we kind of liked, like Journey, where there's definite drop-off on parts of the album, and I can't like an album if I'm having to just like fast forward through
most of it,
three or four of the songs, right? So I don't know how bad the other 80s records are for Elton John. We're going to get to them, I guess, but I did not like this record, although the two singles, I guess, are good.
I mean, I dug them both, and then the rest are just like, don't care.
I will say this, the very first song, that Christmas song, it's not about Christmas or whatever, I think it's as good as these two, and then that's about it.
I thought
for
that
me.
Was a dog.
See, I kind of like that one.
Open it up with a Christmas song?
Well, it's not a Christmas song. That's what I thought was funny. It's really not a Christmas song. But yeah, three songs and a bunch of horse shit. Megan, what did you?
What do young people think of Elton John?
I mean, I feel like Elton John kind of, it always sounds like Elton John, regardless of what it is, just because I feel like his voice is just, it's very distinctive and maybe not like the best voice, obviously a great voice, but I don't know. It's a little cheesy. It's very 80s. I think at the time, because like Chris, you mentioned that he should have just done like another 70s kind of, now that's what everybody loves Elton John for. Yeah. But at the time, I don't think it would have been loved. Like he probably would have gotten like really criticized.
I totally agree with you. It did what it was supposed to do. But yeah, looking back over time, you're like, man, you should not have. You had like a signature sound, dude. Don't do this dumb shit. Yeah.
The 70s stuff is the best stuff when it comes for to sure. like Elton John. I mean, the later stuff, it's not bad, but this is just very schmaltzy.
Yes, I wrote that exact word, Megan. Is this the beginning
because
of him devolving
like
into
exactly
schmaltzy, sappy
is.
Junk?
Yeah, I feel like it's the gateway to him becoming like adult contemporary. Like it's him becoming
but that, was
that
thing.
Schmaltzy.
That was the lane,
I know.
Especially
it's
for
just
people
a
in
step
that age
toward
group.
Candle in the Wind.
Again, I can see, yes, and I can see Elton John giving all three of us the finger because it had two hits on it. It did what he
and
wanted
fuck
it to
you,
do.
Fuck you, I'm Elton John.
And
I'm
his
Elton
castle John. Made yeah. of money.
If you don't like
I just
it.
Did, I just redid a song with Britney Spears, so fuck
so
you.
So fuck you.
Right.
I know.
I get it. I feel like this album we're covering today is the first one of the
money.
Well, I'm as much as it is the artistry. Like in the 70s, I think he's discovering himself. He's doing drugs. He's like, hey, I'm doing the records I want to do. And this even happened to Bowie. We talked about it. Like the next record that we're going to cover by Bowie, Bowie openly said, I started trying to please fans instead of just making art. Mm-hmm. So it's happening. I guess in the 80s, we're super commercial at this point, and that's the whole part of the theme. Yeah, so for me, this is the first one where we're headed down this slippery slope with Elton John, especially from the quality of the work that he had before this.
Mixed bag, spotty.
Yeah.
So, and some of the even
he still has a great voice.
Very good.
Sure, even now.
You know?
And not even, Megan, he's like in the prime. Like, he's not that old at this point, right?
No.
Yeah, he's doing, his voice is fine. He's just starting to think about how do I keep making hits against Prince and Madonna and, thinking more about that than being Elton John.
Stay relevant.
I wanted to say that the album Henry Rock of the Westies is kind of where the aficionados, as far as I can tell, say the good 70s Elton John ended.
Okay.
And that was 75.
Okay.
But it was still two records after Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. So the three records after Goodbye Yellow Brick Road are still considered really good.
I mean, I defy anybody to listen to Goodbye Yellow Brick Road and not get a little teary, get a little something.
For real.
You know, something about that. There's something about that song, man. I don't know what it is. It's just the chord changes or whatever, but it's just, ugh.
Yeah,
it hits you right in the feels every time.
And maybe that's part of why this record, like if this was his first record, maybe we wouldn't think about it the way we do because we don't know what we've heard. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, when I was a kid, my mom played Honky Chateau and Goodbye Yellow Brick Road all the time. So I knew Elton John before I heard this, even as a kid. And it was kind of like, that's kind of shitty Elton John.
Thumbs down for me.
Thumbs down for me.
Yeah, same. Sorry.
All right, well then let's wrap her up, guys. My album of the episode is Easy Peasy Cocteau Twins, Head Over Heels.
Mine.
I'm going to make you say it. I don't even want to think about that.
I'm going to say it. Would you want to fill in the blank? Life's a Riot with Spy Versus Spy by Billy Bragg.
Overly bloated, long title, of course, but yes,
oh
sure.
Oh my God, stop. Hating on Billy
Bragg. He's so over the top with it, so what's so funny about it.
Megan, what's your favorite record of the episode?
I'm going to have to go with The Replacements, Hootenanny.
Awesome.
Very good.
All of us stuck to our guns. You know what? Fuck it. I'm going to change mine. I'm going to go with Life. I'm going to go with Infidels.
I liked Infidels, too. I almost picked that. Yeah. But
I'm going to go with Bob Dylan Infidel.
It's weird because there were three records on this thing that were right in my stuff.
My wheelhouse.
Yeah, Cocteau's were right in my feels. The Replacements right in the feels. Bragg right in the feels. Like the only question is which one meant the most, and that was the one. Yes, that one.
Not Elton John. Yeah,
no,
I don't think. I think we all finally agreed on Elton John.
No, really appreciate everybody listening to the show. We'll have the playlist will be in the show notes. If you want to follow along, sometimes people find it helpful. If they're listening to, you could have it in your podcast app and follow along and go to your Apple Music and be like, okay, what the hell are they talking about? And then go to the song and listen to the whole song, get your own feel, stake out your own territory in that. That's a good way to do it, right?
Yep. And don't forget, our next episode is our fun end of year episode where we're going to give out our awards or our top three each pick and have a special guest. It's going to be so much fun.
End of the quote unquote year with a guest for the good grief. We're coming up in the world, guys.
Yep.
I know.
Chris,
it's
Megan.
It'll be exciting.
I know. Guess what?
What's that?
I made you a mixtape.